All set. All right. Good morning, everyone. I call the regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is about 10:45 on Wednesday, October 20th. I'm Commissioner Julie Fedorchak. With me are Commissioners Brian Crotchis and Randy Christman, so we have a quorum. I already provided my opening comments about the Energy and Natural Resources Day, so with that, I will turn it over to Commissioner Christman for any opening comments you might have.
I have no opening comments, thank you.
All right, Commissioner Crotchis?
I have no comments.
You guys are quiet today. All right, then we have a few items on consent in the previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All right, moving on to the regular agenda. I don't have any items, so we'll turn it over to Commissioner Christman.
I move the commission reject the revised decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed on April 14, 2021 in Tatanka Wind Power LLC, Tatanka Wind Farm, Dickey County Decommissioning Plan and Cost, case number PU-10-73.
Second.
On October 21st of 2000, exactly 52 weeks ago today, the commission approved the decommissioning plan and cost estimate for Tatanka Wind. Tatanka consists of 61 1.5 megawatt turbines in North Dakota, a nameplate capacity of 91.5 megawatts. The approved decommissioning plan included the mobilization of cranes and labor to disassemble the components of the turbines, with a cost estimate of approximately $15.8 million, or just under $260,000 per turbine. They still have not submitted the associated financial assurances. 6 months later, on April 14th of this year, Tatanka submitted a revised decommissioning plan. And by the way, there's a memo associated with this with a typo where it says that was 2020, but it was this year. And that plan relied on the, quote, felling, unquote, approach in to decommission the turbines with a cost estimate of approximately $8.88 million, or just under $146,000 per turbine. So that is a reduction of nearly $7 million. The felling approach eliminates the need for large cranes and instead relies on heavy equipment such as bulldozers to pull the turbines over to the ground and then disassemble. Tatanka's engineering consultant reviewed confidential information prepared for the decommissioning of a wind facility in Iowa as evidence of the success of this technique. They also offered to remove turbine foundations to a depth of 4 feet instead of 3 feet, which would be a benefit. And then finally also requested that we approve an accelerated cash escrow as a form of financial assurance. I stand corrected. That memo that I cited, that was this next one. On July 1st, we had an informal hearing, and that's where the memo said it was 2020, but it was this year. The commission, we held a work session on the 20th, on July 1st of 2020, and asked the company to provide information about whether other regulatory bodies had approved such a method and whether fiberglass blades shatter upon impact, causing fragmentation. On September 21st, Tatanka replied and noted that the consultant who authored the felling plan also authored approved felling plans with two reviewing authorities. I believe those are the Wyoming, I'm not sure if it's the PSC or whoever oversees decommissioning in Wyoming, and then a county in Illinois, as I recall. They also proposed to amend their April 14th plan to at least utilize truck-mounted cranes to remove the turbine blades prior to felling the tower. Despite that improvement, I strongly support denying the updated decommissioning plan in favor of the plan that was unanimously approved last year. At the same time, we can reserve judgment on the felling approach until we learn more and it becomes done more frequently in other areas, or until Tatanka nears the decommissioning date. If the money is set aside to do it the other way, we can make that decision later. But I just want to point out, when we came up with our decommissioning requirements here, we looked to the coal reclamation plan, and this commission has a very successful history of coal mine reclamation dating back over 40 years. And for a long part of that time, one of our principles has been basing our required financial assurances on what we call the worst case reclamation cost estimate. And that principle does add cost, but it eliminates the incentive to abandon reclamation and leave the responsibility to the PSC with less than enough money to carry it out. Tatanka's proposal upends that worst case principle in favor of a best imaginable reclamation cost estimate standard. If this is approved today, it's only logical to assume that every other wind farm operator will be here shortly expecting equal treatment. If we ultimately find there are problems with material scatter or soil compaction or acquisition of permission from the landowners or anything else, it'll be too late. The other alternatives will be out of reach for the amount of financial assurances we have available to carry it out. And so I hope that we reject this proposal.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Well, I do have some discussion, and this I read this approach their filing last week, and wasn't sure, hadn't had any conversations with staff about it, et cetera. But the truck-mounted cranes seemed to be a substantial improvement from the felling method, because it really wouldn't be a felling method. The cranes would allow them to lower down. So do you have some thoughts, Randy, on the risks of the truck-mounted cranes?
That is not the way I understand it. It's partially not the way I understand it. The original approach was, you know, you look at a turbine with three blades, and they're going to knock the whole thing over and dismantle it and clean it up there. Then the subsequent approach that you were referencing with the truck-mounted cranes was to come in and take the blades off first and then tip the whole staff over. But that's still, you know, that is enormous amount of weight and material there. That I think still leaves a lot of room for soil compaction, and you have to be a long ways out there so that whatever's pulling it over doesn't get hit. I'm not sure if it would be hard to approve this and not for other wind farms, and with almost half the cost estimate, they're going to want to reduce their financial assurances. I'm not sure everybody even has leases that allows them to be out there that far away with dozers and such to be pulling them over. I just think there's too much risk involved here. But yes, the summer change to it would have allowed for the cranes to come out and remove just the blade parts and then fell the tower.
Okay. The approach you're recommending reserves the right for the company to come back at any time and re-propose the felling method if there's more experience with that?
They could. And also, you know, let's just say someone gets to the point of reclamation. We have the financial assurances on and the requirements to do it the traditional way of dismantling on file here. Someone gets to the point of wanting to reclaim a wind farm and wants to try this, then we can take a look at it and say, yeah, go ahead and give it a try. And then if it turns out there's problems with it, then we don't have to allow others because we have the evidence that there was problems with that one. But, at some point it would allow potentially for someone to request an and approval to try this, but we keep the worst case scenario financial assurances.
Mm-hmm. Well, you make a compelling argument on the worst case scenario. I do think it's important to be open to cost saving approaches on this sort of thing, because the reality is all of these things, whether it's on a wind farm or a coal generation facility, or it all gets baked into the prices the customers pay. So they're going to be recovering whatever they include as the decommissioning costs into the rates they ultimately charge customers. And I don't know if this Tatanka is North Dakota customers or not, but it still gets baked into utility rates at some point. So I think it's important to always stay open to the ways to save money. But in this case, it is unproven. We're looking at, you know, probably 15 years before we'd even be entertaining the need for such a decommissioning it or later, and a lot can change in that amount of time. So I'm going to go along with your approach on worst case scenario on this. And with the caveat that I encourage this company and any others to bring forward new ideas for decommissioning as they become available and proven in the industry, and let us take a look at those costs and the possibility of employing those technologies in North Dakota.
Is there any further discussion?
One of the challenges that I face as I was looking at the information, I'll be candid, I'm not opposed to the fouling method. And I don't want to base my decision on what the financial implications are, whether it's for this facility or for any facility. If industry can innovate and find a way to do things more efficiently, that should always be encouraged. This is speculative, but it could be argued that the traditional, as it's been called, traditional method of decommissioning a wind turbine is speculative as well, because we haven't had a single facility, to my knowledge, in North Dakota that's been decommissioned. So we're not basing it on any history within our own borders whatsoever. And I think we also get into one of my concerns. We're really getting into what I think is a part of the easement process that a landowner enters into, whether it's with a pipeline company, whether it's with a wind developer, whether it's with a gas plant, how they want their land restored at the end of the process, because that's a private transaction between a business entity and a private landowner. And our job, obviously, is to look out after landowner interests, but also to be working with industry in the appropriate way as well. So my thought as I was reading through this is I would encourage Tatanka to take one more run at this and provide some more specifics. They did say, make some adjustments to the plan. But again, my concern is I don't think we can say there's a traditional way and a speculative way when we haven't had anything occur in North Dakota. And I think we're basing traditional, and I think fairly, on how blades are currently replaced, when a facility is being repowered, how components are replaced, bringing in the crane, short of taking down the pedestal and removing the foundation, the concrete foundation. But I think that's pretty straightforward. Concrete removal has been done in a number of other areas. So I don't want to rule out the fouling method, because I don't know that it isn't more invasive, if you will, than the other forms of the other ways of decommissioning. And I think there are pros and cons to both. So when you look at the landowner interest, I think a key component is to make sure there aren't fiberglass shards on the land afterward. I think that's very important. But those blades are cut on site, and there'll be some fragmentation from cutting them, just the cutting residue, if you will. So if it's windy that day, I think the companies have to be really, really cognizant of that as they're doing this, which eventually they will. But maybe it would be worthwhile circling back to see if there's some more definitive components that can be factored into the decision, so we're not basing it on speculation, but rather fact. And at this point, I think there are two options. One, we can take a vote and deny this, but then I would encourage Tatanka to take another run at it. And I think that's fair. I think we have to be fair to industry and give them that opportunity because, again, if they can become more efficient in any area, I don't think it's something we should base our decision on in terms of cost differences.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission conditionally approve the transfer of surface coal mining permit number KRSB-8802 for the Beulah Mine from Dakota Westmoreland Corporation to Westmoreland Beulah Mining LLC and Westmoreland Beulah Mining LLC permit transfer permit KRSB-8802 application PSC case number RC-20-155.
Second.
So we have sort of a confusing bunch of titles here of company names because you have a parent company that went bankrupt and a new parent company that took over, and then there was the subsidiary under the previous parent company, Dakota Westmoreland Corporation, and this subsidiary under the new parent company, Westmoreland Beulah Mining. But anyway, I'll be referencing all four, so they sound pretty close to the same, but you have to really listen closely for it to make sense. On April 23rd of 2020, Westmoreland Beulah Mining submitted an application for the transfer, sale, and assignment of rights under Permit 8802 for the Beulah Mine. The application proposes to transfer the existing permit from the current permittee, Dakota Westmoreland Corporation, to Westmoreland Beulah Mining. Westmoreland Beulah Mining will be both the permittee and operator for the Beulah Mine and will assume the regulatory obligations previously held by DWC. Westmoreland Coal Company, the original parent, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy on October 19th of 2018. The purchase and sale agreements between Westmoreland Coal Company and Westmoreland Mining, that's the new parent, was effective March 15th of 2019. By the way, our attorneys and our reclamation staff did a wonderful job of working with that whole bankruptcy process, and I can't thank them enough for all that effort. Westmoreland Beulah Mining is a subsidiary of Westmoreland Mining, like I said, that was formed to own and operate this mine. Permit 8802 covers just over 4,900 acres, and those acres are located in 6 sections in Oliver County and 7 sections in Mercer County. The current permit term expires October 25th of 2025. Coal removal from all of this permit was completed in 2009. Reclamation did fall behind some in the area, but I want to say that they have made significant progress in this past year and really have gained a lot of ground on getting this cleaned up and ready to be bonded out. The part of the permit area that's east of North Dakota Highway 49 is in reclamation status, but the permit area that's west of Highway 49 consists of the office shop complex and a haul road and a rail car loading facility that's used to support mining in their other permit, which is 8603, and that is still active, and we transferred that to the new company on August 4th already. As part of the permit transfer application, Dakota Westmoreland is required to submit business entity and violation information and replacement bond and liability insurance documents, records currently in the Office of Surface Mining's application violator system. Do not indicate that the applicant nor any affiliated companies have any unpaid civil penalties, violations that have not been abated within in the required time period, or a pattern of willful violations. Westmoreland Beulah Mining submitted a surety bond in the amount of $10,382,986 for this area. The amount we believe is sufficient to cover the ironically worst case reclamation cost estimate in the permit area. Westmoreland Beulah Mining also provided evidence of adequate liability insurance. This motion includes a condition requiring Westmoreland Beulah Mine to incorporate the business entity, property ownership, and related information into the existing permit by filing a permit revision no later than January 31st of 2022. So they only have 3.5 months to get that done. Dakota Westmoreland published notices of transfer application in the Bismarck Tribune and Beulah Beacon. We sent notices to the appropriate agencies and landowners. No objections or requests for an informal conference were received in this application. Westmoreland Beulah Mining has now filed all the required documents for the permit transfer, and staff recommends that it be approved with the condition I mentioned earlier, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner Crispin. All right. Commissioner Crosius, you're up.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the Commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission, TAN Construction, LLC, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-21-319.
Second.
Okay, this is related to a one-call complaint, North Dakota one-call complaint, that Commission received from West River Telecom alleging a violation by TAN Construction of North Dakota Century Code, the one-call excavation notice system. The Commission did send a letter to TAND enclosing the July 9th, 2021 complaint, and TAND did respond accordingly. And that was in July that they did respond. On September 7th, 2021, a consent agreement between Public Service Commission advocacy staff and TAND was filed for resolution of the complaint. TAND is a business located in Mandan, and this stems back to last November. TAND began an excavation as defined in North Dakota Century Code while performing sewer line work in Stanton, North Dakota. The excavations performed by TAND damage West River Telecom's fiber optic telecommunications cable in 6 locations. The damage was estimated at $11,129.67. 6 customers were affected by the incidents. And again, the complaint alleges that TAN violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to conduct the excavations in a careful and prudent manner. Having investigated the allegations, advocacy staff believes that TAN did violate Century Code. In those instances, they engaged in good faith settlement discussions and came up with an agreement where TAND is assessed a civil penalty of $3,000 with $1,500 suspended on the condition that they commit no further violations within 5 years of the date of the order. And just to give some color on this, because it's every case has, I think I've mentioned it previously, has its own nuances to it. This is a particularly interesting case in that the engineering, in terms of what TAND was doing, called for a 15-foot wide trench. So TAND went and made that, excavated, created that trench to do the sewer line work in Stanton. So they did that and did not damage the fiber optic cables. They were able to dig and preserve those. But the soil conditions were very challenging. And that over the course of time, the 15-foot wide trench within a short period of time essentially became from gutter to gutter because of the sandy soil. So TAN did the right things. They had the locates. They did the digging correctly. But the cave-ins were actually what caused the lines to be severed. So as it reads, excavating in a careful and prudent manner, which they did initially, but they didn't provide the proper support to those cables, which typically isn't an issue, but due to the soil conditions at the time, and when you look at the photos are, which no one, you know, others can't see obviously, but if I had to describe them, you can see where the soil is quite sandy. So they did not violate any safety OSHA requirements, and nothing of that nature was filed. But the mistake they made was not reinforcing with a 2x4, 2x8, but even that might have been a bit challenging in terms of trying to create some form of stability because the trenches were caving in. So I think it was definitely a lesson learned by TAN, and they disputed the complaint, saying that they were very careful, that they had done things properly, but did agree to the penalty. And whenever there's a suspended amount, it's a very strong indicator that they have not had any issues in the past. So they really do have a good track record, because I know they've been quite active in terms of their business and conducting excavations. So someone who's been around for a while has done very good work and hit some soil conditions that were unique, but nonetheless, it still constitutes a violation. It still constitutes a fine. So I think advocacy did a particularly good job in explaining it to me, and or I should say advisory advocacy didn't explain the details to me. I should clarify that. But so at any rate, it's really a unique case, but also one more reminder of all the variables that excavators have to take into account when they're in their field.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Next, I move the Commission adopt the order on interim rates in Northern States Power Company 2021 natural gas rate increase application case number PU-21-381.
Second.
This ties to the rate increase or the rate case that Xcel Northern States Power, doing business as Xcel, filed with the Commission on September 2nd. They as mentioned previously, chose to file a rate case on that date, and which they have the opportunity to do by law. Also, as a part of how statute is written, they are entitled to an interim rate increase, which was also filed on September 2nd. At the same time, Commission advocacy staff following that did file some comments regarding the proposed interim rate increase, and had a difference of opinion on one component. The company did agree to change their request for the interim amount at following advocacy's work, which was, again, some good work in that respect, which reduced the interim request by $1.255 million. And that, again, is on an interim basis, and it ties back to the Fargo gas plant remediation. So that amount was removed, and then, again, following how statute is written, That's how interim rates are determined. And it's about consistency with what has been approved in the past. It's about what the company is entitled to by law. And the other components that they requested to be a part of the interim rate increase qualify under statute to receive consideration and be approved. So the interim rate would be effective November 1st of this year. If there's an overcollection after the rate case is settled, then customers will be entitled to a refund, a portion of that interim rate increase if that winds up being the case. So this is, again, a part of the process, and they're entitled to that as statute is written, and that's our job to follow, is to follow statute. So we'll continue to look at the case, and I've mentioned it before, the timing is less than ideal to be presenting a rate case given the high price of natural gas currently that is in the market. It's roughly tripled from where it was 1 year ago. And I said it in the past, and I know I was quoted in several articles, it's going to be a tough heating season from a pricing standpoint. And, you know, you can't help but be concerned with low-income houses and households in particular. There is heating assistance programs, but the reality when you look at the gradient, the scale how you can qualify, a lot of low-income families don't own a home. That's one reality. So they rent, and therefore, if they're not having an individual gas bill in the apartment or whatever unit they're renting, they're not going to qualify because they're not in a home. The other part is that I think it was just under 13,000 customers qualified for heating assistance last year. When you look at the total number of households in North Dakota, it's a very small percentage. So I think, I don't know this factually, but from what I've heard, I think the vast majority of that qualify are already receiving assistance. So there's that. But to go back to the point that I had made before, it's really about being as efficient as you can with your home. It's about investing in a programmable thermostat. I think that helps. It's about closing rooms that aren't in use during the winter months. It's about, you know, if you're going to be gone for a few days, turning it down as well, and just looking at different things that you can do. If you you know, some people heat their garages with. Have a natural gas heater in the garage. They can turn that down. So it's really going to fall, I think, back onto consumers to alter their behavior within reason and usage within reason, because you still have the comfort factor in terms of not being cold all the time. So it's not a great time. And when you look at natural gas pricing, you have to go back 10 to 12 years. If you go back 10, 12 years, gas prices going into this heating season are about where they were in 2007 and 2008. If you go prior to that, into the 2004, up to that 2007, 2008 period, they were actually, would double again. So there was about 13 years ago, 13 to 17 years ago, gas prices were actually twice as high as they currently are, in that $10 to $12 range. Now they're in that $5 to $6 range. But when you're used to gas being in the $2 to $3 range, which we've been able to take advantage of, we've had more money in our pockets as a result of it for the past decade, you get used to that. And your household budget adjusted a long time ago. And when it doubles, you don't look back to, well, I guess 10, 12 years ago, that's where we were. You think about what it was last year. And that's understandable. I don't look at it any differently. So We will be spending a considerable amount of time, as always, on the rate case, and the final outcome is yet to be determined.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I think, Brian, you did a great job kind of laying it all out. And from my perspective, this is just a really unfortunate convergence of three big factors for Xcel Energy customers. First is the need for the company to refresh its infrastructure and invest in the infrastructure that it uses to serve the customers. The remediation of a very old but somewhat recently discovered environmental hazard in Fargo, which has been mitigated in this initial increase, but it's still out there for North Dakota customers. And then, as Brian just mentioned, this sharp increase in the cost of gas. And so those three issues are all going to impact Xcel gas customers in North Dakota in the coming year and moving forward. I appreciate the company and staff trying to look at ways to levelize that and minimize that as much as possible moving forward and with these interim rates. And then my sense is that these interim rates will hopefully be, a top level in terms of the base rates. And then after we get done with the rate case, I don't expect them to go up much beyond this, but we'll see. It's premature to say. And then, quite honestly, what customers see has the cost of gas included, which is going to be the largest amount moving forward, especially through this winter. So, yeah, definitely a warning to gas and electric and propane heating customers. This is going to be an expensive winter, and costs are going up. And so, look now, talk to your companies and find out ways to winterize your home and take control of your own bills as much as you possibly can. Sometimes there are rate classes you can get into in terms of a demand response type of thing, where you can have a time of day rate or a rate that might be less at certain times, or you can be a peak demand customer where you turn down your usage at peak times and get a lower rate or get a rebate. So those are different options that a variety of customers in North Dakota have, especially on the co-op side. And it just really urged people to get ready for the winter now before the really cold weather hits.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, it's just a point I want to make as well. And, our role is to regulate the distribution side of natural gas service to customers and businesses across the state. We don't control the pricing of that gas. We will review to make sure that it's bought at market prices. So that's a given that occurs. And as mentioned before, companies don't profit from the sale of gas. Utilities don't profit. Other entities certainly do that supply the gas, but the utilities themselves see no benefit to gas prices tripling as they have in this particular instance. If they were cut in half from where they're at, there's no change. There's no benefit to the utilities. If they quadruple, there's no benefit to the utilities. But we don't regulate the pricing side of the equation, and I think it's an important point because we do get a lot of calls from people. And how can you not do something about this? And that's controlled by the FTC, Federal Trade Commission. It's controlled by the markets themselves. So our job is to make sure the gas gets to the homes and businesses safely. But one other thing, and it reminded me as I've talked about businesses, understandably we fixate on the household side of the equation, as we should, and individual consumers and what it means to their household budget. But there's another very important class of customer that helped drive the North Dakota economy, and it's the small businesses in the state. They're still recovering from the impact of the pandemic and trying to get their business back online, getting people back in the door. That's occurring, but they're still in catch-up mode in terms of the lost revenue during the height of the pandemic. And whether it's a small business in Tappan, North Dakota, or Beach, North Dakota, they're still feeling the impacts of what's been occurring over the last 12 to 18 months. And they're trying to get things back online. They're trying to bring employees back, getting people back into the business, their businesses. So it's been a really, really tough stretch for them. And this in particular has a significant impact on their well-being and their ability to bring that additional worker back versus paying it in a higher through higher heating costs. So I really do feel for the low-income households, but I also have an equal amount of concern for the small businesses and even the larger businesses in the state, because everything gets factored into the cost equation. Everything gets factored into the price of goods. But when you look at the two entities or the two groups that are hit the hardest, it would definitely be the low-income households that do own their homes and have to heat them, and then also the businesses and communities, our rural communities across the state. So it's going to be tough for all concerned, and I know that's a concern that we all have. So it's not just my concern, we all have that concern.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, my last item, I move the commission suspend the rate, assess a filing fee of $10,000, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2022 rates, case number PU-21-396.
Second.
On October 4th, 2021, Northern States Power Company, doing business as Xcel, filed its 2022 transmission cost recovery rider. The purpose of the rider is to recover costs from NSP's North Dakota Electric customers for 23 previously approved transmission projects and 11 new transmission projects, as well as net expenses from Midcontinent Independent System Operator Billings, otherwise known as MISO. The proposal on the electric side would increase the TCR rate and have an impact to the average, the impact to an average residential customer would be 41 cents per month. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are whether the investments and associated costs for the new or modified electric transmission facilities qualify for recovery, whether the incurred costs are reasonable and prudent, and whether the rate adjustments are consistent with the terms of NSP's tariff. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interests in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 6, 2021, and anyone wishing to do so can contact the Public Service Commission here at the State Capitol, 701-328-2400.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. I should grab my calendar for announcements here. Okay, tomorrow we have, this afternoon, we have an informal hearing on the MDU Mandant Ellendale Transmission System Upgrade, a project that has gone on with MDU for a bit. On tomorrow, we have a work session on some rules for the standards of service in the electric utility side, and a informal hearing on NSP cost of gas tariff. And let's see, coming up in November, we have another couple of hearings on some requests for extensions from the light mitigating technology. We had one of those last week as well. So it's looking like a pretty busy next number of weeks with those light mitigating technology requests for extensions and a number of other things at the commission level. So with that, I think we will adjourn and have questions, and then can we move straight into the admin portion of the meeting after that?
Quick break.
Okay. All right. We're adjourned.